All right. Welcome, everyone. We find ourselves on Chof Amud Aleph 20A. And you know, if we succeed in keeping our regular pacing, that would mean that next week we will, God willing, finish the first perek of Sukkah, which is very exciting. And I know that many of you use the Art Scroll. I believe the Art Scroll is two volumes. I use mainly the Masifta Gemaras, so those are three volumes. So actually, for me, I'm going to be finishing volume number one of the Masifta Gemara that I referenced. So it definitely feels like a milestone to me, at least. You should feel like it's a milestone as well. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. We have to get there first. So just a little bit of review because we're going to parachute into the middle of a discussion. Previously, we had a machlokas about the mats, right? Think about it, almost like the bamboo mats that we use for our sukkahs. So the question is that remember that one of the criteria for for kosher schach is that it's not mekabel tuma. It's not susceptible to becoming tame. So the issue is that something which is designated to be for people to lie down on, to recline on, that is something that is mekabel tuma. However, something which is usually used for a building, i.e. schach, that would not be mekabel tuma. So we had a little bit of an ambiguity in our Mishnah. The Tana Kamma distinguishes between big mats and small mats. Big mats by default are for schach. Small mats by default are for reclining and thus are not kosher for schach. But then we left off with trying to figure out, trying to make heads and tails of Rabbi, who was the second opinion? Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer says that both big and small mats share the same status. And we were trying to make sense of trying to make sense of him. So what Rava said, maybe I'll just looking on the bottom of 19b, if you want to glance over there on 19b, we left off with Rava's reading of the matter. According to Rava, he said, Bigedola kuli amalo pligi distama lesichoch ki pligi bikatana. That everyone agrees that a large mat is by default meant for schach, is kosher schach. And Rabbi Eliezer and Tana Kamma just argue their dispute is only pertaining to a small mat. Rabbi Eliezer says it's likewise by default for schach. And the Chachamim, the Tana Kamma, they say no, a small mat generally is for reclining and thus is not kosher schach. That was where we left off. And where we find ourselves is about a quarter way down on 20A on Chaf Amud Aleph. We're at the words Amar Le Abaye. And Abaye is going to present two challenges to this current framework, to this current way of understanding the Mishnah that Rava gave us. So Amar Le Abaye, challenge number one. If this is true, that Rabbi Eliezer holds that big mats, small mats, they're all kosher for schach by default. If this is true, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Achas Ketana v'Achas Gedola, he says, look at the language, he says, both small and large mats share the same status. Really, the thing that we do know for sure already from the Tana Kamma is that large mats are kosher for schach. So if the idea is that Rabbi Eliezer wants to extrapolate and say the same way large mats are by default kosher for schach, small mats are also kosher for schach. So then really his phraseology should have been reversed. He should have said, achas gedola v'achas ketana mi boile. He should have said, big mats and small mats share the same status. By the fact that he formulated himself by saying, small mats and big mats share the same status. Apparently, the way that what that implies is that he's extrapolating from the status of small mats to large mats. So that seems to be a matter of confusion here. And then the second point he makes is is that actually, if we look elsewhere, we see that Rabbi Eliezer actually takes a more machmir, more stringent position than Rava leads us to believe. Oh, ki pligi bigadola hu de pligi. In fact, the argument that Rabbi Eliezer has with the Chachamim pertains to a large mat. Rabbi Eliezer lechumran. In fact, Rabbi Eliezer is the more machmir shita. How so? We have a brisa, titania. Machatzelas hakonim. If you have a mat of reeds, which is gedola, a large one, misachimba, the Tana Kama says, you can use it for schach. And then it's Rabbi Eliezer Omer, imena mekabelos to misachimba. Only if it's not mekabel tuma can use it, meaning Rashi explains, only if you are beferish, if you explicitly say, I am making these this small mat for the sake of schach, for my little pop-up sukkah, then it is kosher schach. But by default, Rabbi Eliezer assumes that a large, even a large mat, by default, would be mekabel tumah and would not be kosher schach. So now we have the opposite of what Rava was telling us. In fact, Ela Amar Rapapa, Rapapa says this is how you have to read the Mishnah. Beketana kuli amalo pligi, distam l'shkiva. Everyone agrees, even the Chachamim concede, that small mats by default are not kosher schach. They're used for reclining. Ki pligi, where do they debate this? Bigadola. Their whole debate only pertains to a large mat. Tanakamas are estam gedola sichach. The Tanakamas says, their large mat by default is for schach. Rabbi Yezer savar estam gedola nami l'shkiva. Whereas Rabbi Yezer says, nope, the same way that small mats are not kosher schach by default, large mats are also not kosher schach by default. And that, by the way, fits a lot better with the language of the Mishnah. In the language of the Mishnah, he said, achas ketana v'achas gedola. Now it makes sense. He's extrapolating. He's saying the same way a small mat by default is not kosher for schach, achas gedola, so too a large mat is not kosher for schach. It fits beautifully with the formulation of the Mishnah now. And then you might say, wait, but you know, you think it fits so nicely with the formulation of the Mishnah? Well, my asa l'shkiva dekamar. But in the Mishnah, he says, when it's asa l'shkiva, it is not kosher. That sounds like you have to go out of your way to designate it for reclining. Doesn't that imply by default that the schach is kosher? So apparently this is how you have to read Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah. This is, who am I to say this, but it's a little bit more of a forced reading, it would seem. Haki kamar, stam asiyasa nami l'shkiva ad ava l'sicha. What Rabbi Eliezer is saying is that by default, all schach, anything that could be schach, all of these mats are by default designated for laying down, for reclining on them, unless you go out of your way to have kavana to designate them for schach. So if you're keeping score, right, if you had like your Punnett square, this is what we would be looking at. So, right, you have big, I don't know, maybe our school gives you one of these, but you know, you can always imagine big schach, small schach, Tana Kama, Rabbi Eliezer, okay? So let's like check the boxes over here. Rabbi Eliezer across the board, big and small, is not kosher for schach. The Chacham, everyone, to say a small one is not kosher for schach. We get a check only in one box. The Chachamim, when you have large schach, that's when we have a sheet that it says by default it's kosher for schach. And that brings us to the end of this section of the Gemara, which is really just a wrap-up of what we had last time. But as you can see, that wrap-up of our previous discussion took us literally halfway down the Amud, and now you can see why I had to find some place to pause the conversation, lest we didn't have any Gemara to do this week. So let me pause for a moment. Is there anything I can clarify at this time? Okay. Don't worry, guys. We are not done with this sugya yet. We still have different details to cover, though there is going to be something, I think, particularly fascinating that relates to the laws of Avelus that we're going to discuss toward the bottom of Kaf Amud Aleph. So going forward, Tanur Rabbanan, Machatzel Shel Shifa V'Shel Gemi. So these are different kinds of, I don't know if reed is the right word, like different kinds of plants that are by the river. So Gadolah, so the commonality in terms of their characteristics, Rashi says, is that Tehein Rachin, that they're soft, meaning they'd be comfortable to lay down on. So Gadolah Misachin Ba, Kitana E Misachin Ba. So if they're large, if you have a large mat made of these materials, then we assume by default they are kosher schach. A small one is for reclining, would not be kosher schach by default. Shalkana v'shal chilas. So reeds or chilas, which is another kind of something that grows near the river, I believe. The common denominator between the two of them, Rashi tells us, is shehein kachin, that they are by default not comfortable to lay down on. So gedola misachin ba, if you have a large mat, you can use it for schach. However, aruga a misachin ba, but if it is kind of woven in a way that makes it a smoother surface and more comfortable, Rashi tells us, then you could not use it for schach because it's, I'll just read what Rashi says. D'stama l'shchiva d'lahayi ragin l'orga el l'shchiva sh'tei chalako nocha. So because when you weave it together and make give it a smooth texture, by default, something like that is made for someone to lay down on to be comfortable, and thus would not be kosher for schach. However, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi Omer Mishum Aviv Achazov Achazov Misachimba V'kein Hi Haya Rabbi Dosa Omer Kidvarav. However, there are those who disagree, and they say, no, even if it's woven, it is still okay anyway. All right, if you decide to make schach out of these materials, consult your local Orthodox rabbi. All right. Now, we're going to go into some new territory over here. Not new territory, but we're coming back a little bit. Every now and then we bring in, well, not every now and then, because one of the criteria that we've been dealing with until now is whether schach is mekabel tumah or not. It's about time we delve a little bit more deeply into the laws of tumah and tahara. I regret, actually, in the Masifta Gemara, they had a really great, like, 4-point introduction of, like, the laws of tumah and tumas meis and everything. I meant to bring it with me because they lay it out so in such an organized, beautiful fashion. But I'll tell you the important thing to keep in mind here. So in general, the way tumah works is that there are degrees of tumah. So a cadaver is, you know, the avi avos ha-tumah, a corpse is, you know, the grandfather of tumah. And then if, you know, a human or something else comes in contact with it, you become an avatumah. And then avatumah, you know, touches something else, becomes a rishon l'tumah. And as you go further degree by degree, less things could become susceptible to it until the point that you get to, like, just, you know, Trumos and Maestros can, but Chulin would not be susceptible to Tumah. So what's interesting is that when it comes to a Zav is, you know, some kind of, not really, we're not exactly sure maybe what it is. It's like not exactly a seminal emission, it's some kind of excretion. So in a case like that, what's unique about a Zav is that he has this thing called Tumas Midras, that just by laying on things and going on things and riding on things, he could render them tame as well. What's important to know that the Gemara is going to point out is that something which is susceptible to Tumas Midras also is susceptible to becoming tame mace. And essentially, when something, like when you have mats which are used for laying down on, and they are full force kalim, they are susceptible to tumas midras as well. And so our discussion in the upcoming Gemara is really just determining what is considered a bona fide kli that's made for laying down on to the degree that it would be susceptible to all these different kinds of tumah. That's the basic idea. Okay. Talia, you're knocking so nicely. If you really want to come in, you can come in with mommy's help. Okay. There's a lot of knocks on the door. Let me just I'll just let her in so she stops knocking. 1 second. Okay. All right. So going forward, so it's not hasam. Kol ha-chotzolos. Now the Gemara doesn't tell us what chotzolos are. We'll get to that in a moment. Kolach Chatzolos Metame Tame Meis. Devar Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa says that all Chatzolos are susceptible to Tumas Meis. V'chachamim Omrim Midras. V'chachamim say Midras. So Midras in Tame Meis Lo, you're saying they're only susceptible to Tumas Midras and not to Tame Meis? V'ha Anam Tana. Didn't we teach in the Mishnah in Nida? Kol hametame midras metame tame meis. So anything that can, have tumas midras can also become tame meis. So rather, ema af midras. They're saying is that in addition to tumas meis, also tumas midras as well. Okay, good. That's the machlokis that we have regarding chotzolos. Now you might be wondering, what are chotzolos? Sounds a little familiar to another term we've had, right? So, my chutzolos, Amar Avadimi Bar Hamaduri Marzubli. Okay, Shkayach, my Marzubli. What's Marzubli? Amar Avaba Mizavli. These different kinds of leather, kalim of leather bags, that's what they are arguing about. Whereas, Rishon ben Lakish Omer, Machatzolos Mamish, right? It sounded a little bit familiar. We're talking about actual mats. That's what their discussion is about. Now you know why we brought in this Gemara. And their machlokas is, to what degree are mats susceptible to tuma? So va'azda Reish Lakish Tame, and now just to show how Reish Lakish is consistent over here, we go on a little bit of a tangent. To Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish once taught, He began by saying, Hareini kaparas Rabbi Chiyu banav, and may I be, as he began his discourse, he said, may I be an atonement for Rabbi Chiyu and his children. Shebetchila kishenishtachicha Torah mi Yisrael, Allah Ezra mi Bavel v'yasta. So when Torah began to become forgotten from the Jewish people, Ezra came from Bavel and he reestablished it. And when it began again to become lost, Hil HaBavli came up and he reestablished it. Then it started to fade away again. Then came Rabbi Chiya and his children, and they reaffirmed and reestablished what we needed to know in terms of the education. Now, before we get to the teaching from Rabbi Dosa, Rabbi Chiya Ubanav, this is a very interesting language. You will hear sometimes that somebody, when they are in a year of Avelus for their father or for their Rebbe, they will say, when they quote them, Harini Kaparas Mishkavo. In fact, that's what Rashi tells us. If you look three lines up from the bottom, Rashi says, what is the meaning of Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo? Yisurin Habayin Alayi L'Kaparaso. That any Yisurin, any suffering that I endure, may also serve as an atonement for them. Now, do they need, these Chashav people need my atonement to help them? So, Sharechi Ubanav. So, Yiyu. So, Lashon Kavod, who says, so Rashi explains, this is a Lashon of honor. That when one mentions, and Rashi and Kedushin says as well, when someone mentions the name of their father or their Rebbe after their death, they're supposed to say this. I didn't get a chance to look carefully at it, but I was looking a little, I was poking around. There's a tshuva of the Tashbates in which he notes that the custom of saying Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo is not for the rest of time necessarily, but it's for the year of Avelos. Now, this is consonant with the idea of reciting Kaddish for the year following the Avelos. If you remember, when I first came here on Thursday mornings, we did Shar HaGmul for a little bit. The Ramban has discourses on theology, the afterlife, and theodicy, and lots of very fascinating things. So he explains there that that certain souls, if they're like borderline, then they do go to Gan Eden, but they need to spend 11 months atoning for their sins in Gehenna. And if they're exceedingly wicked, then they have to suffer for 12 months. And that's why we generally, when one says Kaddish for a parent, they only say it for 11 months. I know Sfardim, they just do a Hefsik for 1 week. But the Ashkenazic custom is after 11 months that it's no longer said, because otherwise you are implying that your parent is a Rasha, which you wouldn't want to do. Though the halacha is, if they actually were, and you're pretty confident about that, then you'd be doing them a favor by saying it. So it's the same idea that during this 11 months or a year, when the person's soul is potentially, depending on their standing, going through these more challenging transition into the world to come. So therefore we say, Hareini Kaparis Mishkavo. I got in, you know, these are pastoral adventures as a rabbi. So I remember a few years ago, I ran a Shiva home. And after Shiva one day, the family was asking me a lot of questions. It became like kind of rapid fire round, like, oh, what do I, you know, just like, it was a lot of like just your kind of your typical Hilchos Avelos halakhic questions, a lot of technical things that came up, like, oh, when can I take my shoes off and things like that. So, and then just like out of nowhere, as I'm, you know, rattling off and answering their questions, someone says, oh, so wait, so what? So Kaddish is for 11 months. Why would you for 11 months? So I said, you know, I basically said what I said here, kind of like matter of factly. I said, yeah, the idea basically is that, you know, we assume sometimes people need to go for 11 months. So it's like an insurance policy. And then like one of the Avelim there just like completely freaked out. And they're like, wait, you're saying like the soul of my beloved is suffering in the world, is suffering in Gehenna right now? And I said, I'm sure they're a very good person and didn't have to be there. But it's interesting, you know, this is a broader question about when you know the facts, which facts do you want to share with people? Are they able to handle the truth? So I learned from that. To maybe find some way to avoid the question in the future if I think that people don't want to hear it. So what I generally do, by the way, whenever someone asks me, you know, even on social issues, and the answer, you know, does it say in the Torah that you have to kill Amalek? And then I usually say, I'm happy to provide an answer. Do you want the truth or do you want me to sugarcoat it? So then people generally say, I'd like the truth. So I say, okay, well, I gave you Hasra, and now I'll give you the information. So, and if people say I'd rather not, then I don't give them the answer. So that's my way of solving it. But hopefully we should never have to know of these things. Okay. I digress, as happens. So Reish Lakish says, Hareini Kaparis Mishkavo for Rabbi Chiya and his children. Now, what did the great Rabbi Chiya and his children teach us? They said, "Lo nechleku Rabbi Dosef haChachamim amachatzel shel Usha." This whole machlokus about these mats, about what degree they're susceptible to tuma, this argument did not pertain to the mats of Usha. Turning the page, shehein tmeos, they are automatically tame because Rashi explains the miuchados l'shchiva. They are made for the purpose of lying down. Velo Tveria Shehein Tahoros. And everyone agrees when it comes to the mats of Tveria that are made there, that they are Tahor. Rashi explains, because Kashotain, they're very hard. Nobody would want to sleep on them. Rather, Alma Nechleku, what's this whole Machlokus pertain to? Al Shar Makomos, to mats that are made in other places. Mar Savar came with the lake of the Yosef Laya Kitzveria Damyan. The opinion of, I think it was, the Chachamim, was that since people do not generally lay down on these mats, therefore they should be treated like Tveria and are only susceptible to Tumas Meis. Umar Savar came to Demikri Yasi Elayak Ushanim, but since some people will, Rashi explains, go out of their way to designate these mats as for sleeping purposes, therefore, out of caution, we treat all the mats that way. We regard them all the same way, and thus they are not kosher for schach. Why do we bring this all in? Just basically to back up Reish Lakish's point, to show that he's consistent and that he has good backing, that this machlokus pertains to mats. That's what the meaning of chotzelos are. That brings us to the top of Chaf Amud Beis. And as I said, God willing, as long as all goes according to plan, here's Hashem, we will be finishing the first Perek, God willing, next week. So wishing everyone a Freilichen Chanukah, a good Shabbos, and take care. Good learning together.